Hour number two, Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezevic, the reporter Nick Kieser, hanging out on this rainy Friday with you. Baseball season is here. Hockey winding down, all the things going on. But, of course, we got to have time to talk about football. The draft, about a month away. Hard to believe that it is upon us. But something, Michelle, came up yesterday, and I made a mental note that I was going to bring this up with you today when I was co-hosting Stillman & Company with Teron Davenport, TD, from ESPN. We had Jason Fitz on, also from ESPN, and I brought up Hendon Hooker, quarterback for Tennessee. Yesterday was Tennessee's pro day. I know he tossed it around a little bit. He's still rehabbing from the knee and the ACL. But one thing Fitz said, and he was just answering a question, and he just kind of said it very nonchalant, but I kind of go, wait a minute, I haven't even thought about that. I think that's important. And that was that, you know, if a team takes Hendon Hooker in the first round, they get the fifth-year option. And I look at somebody like Hendon Hooker, that fifth year could be important. Because this year, you know, he's not a day one guy. It could be considered a redshirt year. So if you can get him at the end of the first round and have that fifth year option, I think that could be important. I brought it up again with Teron Davenport later in the show. This is what TD said about that. With this maybe being a redshirt year, he's not a day one guy. He's not a day one starter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But if you take him at the end of the first round and you have the fifth year option on there, could that be intriguing for teams?
Yeah, I mean, because now you got 4 years, once he's healthy, 4 years of control at a pretty moderate level. Because chances are, if that happens, it would be like back end of the first round. Jeffrey Simmons was a 19th pick, fifth-year option. He's playing. It's $10.75 million.
Right.
Now, obviously, different position.
Sure.
You know, but so the number's going to be higher, but still it's – another year of having a guy on a more manageable pay scale, and that allows you to do things outside to build around.
That was TD yesterday on Stillman & Company. So that intrigued me a lot, Michelle. What do you think?
Yeah, no, it was something that I hadn't even thought of either, Chase. I mean, we talk about all these factors and, you know, where are you going to draft these quarterbacks? Never expected Hendon Hooker to be a second-round guy, but I could easily see a team – trying to draft him later in the first round whether they want to trade some second round picks for a lower first round pick and want to use their higher first round pick for somebody else if he's available, because that fifth year option is so important. I mean, how many times do we talk about teams where when they have a rookie or when they have a young quarterback still on his rookie deal, how they can bolster their roster in so many other areas? And you know, we've talked about Hendon Hooker. He's a very efficient quarterback, and Joe Rexroad has compared him to Kirk Cousins a lot. I mean, he's not a flashy Patrick Mahomes, but he's very efficient. And, you know, I look at a guy like that if you could, you know, 5 years, keep him on that cheaper deal, especially with the quarterback market just skyrocketing right now. I mean, we're seeing guys like Daniel Jones get a huge contract. So, you know, Hendon Hooker, that fifth-year option, it really is so important because you can build around him. And that's where I see him being the most successful in the NFL. I look at a guy like – I still think Jalen Hurts' ceiling is higher than a guy like Hendon Hooker. But, I mean, it's crucial. I mean, it comes down to salary cap and, you know, cap casualties and things like that. And I know we can say, you know, the cap isn't real all the time, but – the longer you can have a guy on a cheaper rookie deal, the better, honestly. Not for them, because, of course, they want to get their second contract, and that's important, and I completely get that. But just from a business perspective and looking at it from an NFL team's perspective, I mean, that's what they want all the time, most of the time, right? I mean, they can have a guy for cheaper.
So here's how I look at this. If I am Rand Carthon and Mike Vrabel with the Titans, I'm going to make some phone calls to Dallas, Buffalo, Cincinnati. That's 26, 27, 28. Now, New Orleans might be, even though they just signed Derek Carr, they still might want to draft somebody like a Hendon Hooker late in the first round. I don't think so, but you know, maybe something to consider. Maybe you call them too, and then Philly and Kansas City, and say, hey, you know, are you interested in 11? And if they are, you fight really hard to get another day two pick. So either another second, maybe late in the second round, or another third. That's what intrigues me the most about moving back and trading out of 11 is you could get another second round pick, another third round pick, because I think there could be some depth, some good value on day two that could really fill some of the needs that the Titans have. So that's what would intrigue me the most. And then you have a quarterback that you can develop. Charles London can help develop over the course of the next couple of years.
You bring up a good point, Chase. And actually, The Athletic just came out with a mock draft by Bruce Feldman. And he has the Tennessee Titans staying with their 11th overall pick, drafting wide receiver out of Ohio State.
Smith Ajigba?
Yes. So they have the Tennessee Titans drafting him at 11. And then similar to what you were saying right there, Chase, about, you know, maybe trying to get a later first round pick, they trade with Seattle for the 20th overall pick. And take a guess at who they pick.
Hendon Hooker.
Try again.
Will Levis.
Ding, 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 ding.
So they have Levis dropping to 20.
Yep. So they have.
Apparently he likes eating potato chips.
So they have him dropping to 20. But, you know, that's another option that we haven't really discussed. We've talked about, okay, what if you could, like, trade back? You know, you could give up 11 and try to accumulate some more second-round picks. But, you know, another option, too, would be giving up. Because it doesn't say in here what they gave up to Seattle. I would have to, you know, see. But, like, putting a package together to, you know, get two first-round guys, then you get a wide
running back a part of that?
Yeah, right. Right. Well, then you get your wide receiver in a wide receiver class that's not very deep, but still a top 11 pick in the NFL draft, and then you still get a rookie quarterback because Levis dropped a bit. And so then you would get two. And that's a situation it hadn't even crossed my mind. And then, they have Hendon Hooker going at 23rd to the Minnesota Vikings. So
that's interesting.
So those are the two guys that dropped. And then it's Bryce Young, CJ Stroud, and actually Richardson going to the Colts.
Okay.
So, you know, a couple different scenarios out there, but what do we actually think the likelihood that they draft a quarterback? Because I feel like whether it's just mock draft season and we're fully invested in it right now, Chase, I mean, I feel like when the season ended, I did not entertain the idea of them drafting a quarterback whatsoever. And now I feel pretty strongly that it could happen.
I think if there is a guy they like that is there when they're on the clock, they'll do it. If not, they're not going to reach. And, you know, because I think we all agree next year's quarterback class is going to be deeper.
Correct.
And next year's quarterback class is going to be better. I mean, there's a lot of what ifs with next year. I mean, we all look at Caleb Williams and Drake May and go, okay, we know those two guys. But, you know, we were laughing yesterday. Joe Milton could be a first round or a day three guy. Mm-hmm. We don't know, you know, how that's going to pan out. Shakir Sanders, you know, he could be a part of it. He's somebody. I mean, there are others in there. Bo Nix that might end up being a lot better and be more NFL prospects. Because this time last year, we weren't talking about Hendon Hooker.
No.
So, I mean, a lot can change.
It can change between now and then. So much. So we can talk about these guys now. Caleb Williams, right? Drake May. You threw in Bo Nix. Joe Milton. And I guarantee 7 months from now, we are like, oh, that was a bust senior year or something like that. So that's what makes it fun, though, the unknown. So.
Oh, yeah. And you mentioned wide receiver a couple times in this conversation. We'll get to that next because after spending time with Teron yesterday, I feel like maybe we've devalued this wide receiver class just because it's not top heavy. We'll discuss that coming up here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
If you're a team with a top 15 pick, Fitzy, do you take a receiver? And if so, is there a receiver that you feel is worthy of a top 15 pick?
I mean, I don't. And that's a really good question, TD, because, like, every year we talk about these receiver classes being the best. And I know everybody's in love, rightfully so, Jackson Smith and Jigba, a lot of people like. Jacoby Addison's a guy that a lot of people like. There's Quentin Johnston, guy that a lot of people like. But when you're talking top 15, man, I don't think there's such a huge difference between some of those guys to the rest of the guys that it's worth that reach, right? Like, if you're telling me it's for Marvin Harrison Jr. next year, I completely understand it. I just think this year's class is a little bit more lumped together, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, frankly, I'd be a lot more comfortable. Wide receivers, I think, are going to go through a run starting at about 25 to 40 in the draft.
Jason Fitz, yesterday on Stillman & Company with yours truly and Teron Davenport. Chase McCabe, Michelle Knezovic here with you. Are we devaluing this wide receiver class a little bit because it's not top heavy? And I think that TD and Fitzy made a great point that there are some talented receivers in this draft, but they're not like we've seen in years past, Michelle, where it's, you know, top 10, top 15, like he asked in the question. It's more later in the first round, and then day two, second and third round, where I really think you can find some talented players. And that's what's intriguing to me. I mean, I look at some of the rankings that the draft experts have, and that's where it all shakes up. That's why I'm intrigued by the Titans potentially moving back and getting an extra day two pick.
Well, and that gives them the luxury, too, of knowing that, okay, we need to get another wide receiver to pair with Treylon Burks, but not feeling like it has to be a first-round one because there aren't too many top-heavy guys like you know, Jamar Chase a couple years ago or Devontae Smith a couple years ago, right? You could get a tackle or whoever the best player is available at that position, you know, once it's time for you to make your pick. But the fact that there are some other serviceable guys, I mean, I look at a guy like Cedric Tillman from Tennessee, like a big body guy, but kind of went under the radar this year because he was injured for a majority of the season. He had that tightrope surgery, but you know, when you compare him to a Jalin Hyatt, who we've seen fluctuate in the draft, pretty much, I mean, to what Jason Fitz said, you know, 20 to 40. I mean, that's kind of where Jalin Hyatt has been. He's been all over the place. I think I've seen him as high as 25th and as low as maybe in the 50s or something like that. But, you know, he's going to be your speedy slot guy, but still – some people think, you know, he's small. He's a small guy. He's gained 8 pounds since the combine in Indianapolis when they weighed him yesterday. But I look at a guy like Cedric Tillman too, who was their number one prospect, but then was injured for a majority of this year. So Jalin Hyatt got that exposure and was able to capitalize off of it. But you know, I look at a guy like him who could be a nice solid addition to this roster, and I know Vols fans would be very happy about that.
Yeah, oh, no doubt. Here's Teron Davenport expanding upon this a little bit, talking about some of the depth at wide receiver.
It's still deep, but it's not top half deep. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So hence the question, okay, top 15, do you? And the answer, no. But if you could trade back, I mean, look, Zay Flowers.
I like him.
Hey, and it's funny, I remember, so I had watched him throughout the year, obviously, but then just like sitting down and just watching tape and like focusing on him, I'm like, yo, this is Joey Galloway. You know what I mean? And I said, well, you know, let me scale it back. He reminds me of Brandon Cooks, like a little dude that could win on the outside, plays with so much speed, and get you yards after catch, and could return punts for you. He's a guy, like you get him in the 20s, you're cashing in. At 41, right, you know, you get a Jalin Hyatt, you get a Tyler Scott if he's there. You get – there's so many. A Josh Downs. No one's talking about Josh Downs, but you talk about a route surgeon. That's what he brings to the table. So the thing that's cool about this is there's so many receivers. You look at Wake Forest's A.T. Perry. We're talking about a 6'4", 215-pound guy. You throw it up, he's going to go up and get it. he ran in the 4.4s at the combine. No one's talking about him, but he's another guy. It's just so deep. Jonathan Mingo. Then you go to you want to get a guy that is just completely flying under the radar in the media? Princeton's Andre Yosivash. This guy is a heptathlete. His 60-meter time in the heptathlon at the championships was the fastest ever. Mm-hmm. He went down to the Senior Bowl, killed it, leveled up against those DBs. He's training with Juju Brents, the Kansas State corner, and there's another one that they're going against each other every day. So I say all that to say, like, there's so many prospects, so many, and it is a deep class, but it's just not top-heavy.
That was Teron yesterday, and I agree with that. And, you know, he mentions Tyler Scott. Tyler Scott from Cincinnati is, you know, if I'm looking at this from Fox Sports, and Mike Renner from Pro Football Focus said, if you miss out on Jalin Hyatt in the first round, Cincinnati wide receiver Tyler Scott is the man you want on day two. And he's a second-round pick. And I think for the Titans, that first, whether it's at 11 or they move back, you get the best player available you have on your board, mm-hmm. at whatever position that is. If it's not receiver, or maybe even if it is receiver, because I think we all agree they could get deeper at receiver, you
really
could get somebody
position.
In the second and third round. Like, if they come out of this draft with two receivers like they did last year, I'm not going to be mad about that. Not at all.
Yeah, I mean, and they still have Kyle Phillips, which is important to remember that he hopefully can be somewhat of a factor next year. I agree with you, Chase. If they can get two wide receivers who can be effective this year and are guys who can step into that wide receiver room and create opportunities for themselves, like we saw Kyle Phillips do in training camp. I mean, he ended up getting hurt at the beginning of the season, but if you can have guys like that, I mean, Kyle Phillips was a six-round pick, and he was a guy who could do special teams for you, and it kind of just, you know, ended up crumbling because he got hurt, but a bunch of those guys that TD mentioned, that just because a class isn't top-heavy, you still could find a guy who could be a great addition to the team. No, maybe he's not going to be a true number one, but I do still look at this wide receiver room, Chase, and I think the most veteran guy in the room is Nick Westbrook-Ikhine.
Yeah.
And I still think that, you know, do they feel confident do they feel confident going into this season as him the most veteran guy in the room?
Well, and they could still pick a veteran up, you know, after the draft, after June 1. There could certainly be more moves, and I think there will be with that. But, you know, if you're a team that is in transition, which I think we all believe they are, and you're, you know, because I'm thinking it's going to be Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry still, but, you know, let's get through the draft. You know, once we get through the draft, if they're still here, then they're going to be here. But I believe. But a lot can change. And if you're a team in transition, then okay, I'm all right with a young receiver core and just let them grow. But I also hear what you're saying, that, you know, it is a concern that NWI is your veteran guy.
Well, the reason I have that concern is because you have a guy like Derrick Henry and you have a guy like Ryan Tannehill who are established in this league. And I think, okay, now you have this very, very young wide receiver core. If you believe that you still want to keep this core together and Tannehill and Derrick Henry and run it back and see what you can do and in your division and in the playoffs, then great. And then I say, okay, you need a veteran wide receiver. But if you're planning on drafting a young quarterback and this is the beginning of a reset, rebuild, kind of turning of the page, then I don't think it's as big of a deal. It comes down to more of, you know, what is the vision right now? And I don't think that they fully know what the team is going to look like.
No, they have no idea. It's still a work in progress. But it's certainly an interesting conversation nonetheless. Coming up next, Michelle, we're going to talk some betting. I am excited about this. Final Four this weekend. Baseball has started. Wes Reynolds from VSiN is going to join us. So that's coming up here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezovic. One note to pass along real quick. This just coming out, the Nashville Sounds have postponed their game tonight against Louisville out of an abundance of caution due to the weather. Looks like we're going to have some pretty severe weather later in the day and through the evening. So they will have a season opening doubleheader tomorrow starting at 5:05, pregame at 4:50 on 94.9 The Fan. So just wanted to pass that along if you were planning on going to the game tonight. Also on 94.9 The Fan, we have the VSiN Network. Talking sports betting, something we launched last year, bringing on VSiN, and it's been awesome to have them as a part of our family. Wes Reynolds from the VSiN Network joins us now to talk a little betting for this weekend with the Final Four. Wes, how you doing?
Morning, Wes.
Thanks, Michelle. Good morning. How are you?
Doing fantastic. It's awesome to have you because, listen, this is exactly how we drew it up. We knew that it was going to be San Diego State, a 5 seed against FAU, a 9 seed, and then Miami, a 5 seed, and UConn, the 4 seed. No ones, no twos, no threes. That's what we all had, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I have one left in my bracket, and I feel like I'm ahead of like 95% of the people just having that.
Well, I was already told that in my bracket pool, I'm finishing last, so that means I get my money back. So,
you get a mulligan. That's the best thing about it.
So I would assume that UConn is probably the team that everybody's going to latch on to as the favorite with the Final Four remaining, but you tell me if I'm right or wrong on that.
Yeah, absolutely. And spoiler alert, that's the one team I have left in my bracket. I did not have the foresight to put Florida Atlantic or Miami in there, but yeah, UConn right now is the odds-on favorite. Just looking around town here, they're actually as high as like minus 130 or minus 140. So when there's a minus by their name and there's four teams left, they're the odds-on favorite. And look, rightfully so. I think that they've been the most impressive team in the tournament. They're the only team left that really hasn't had what you would call a test this tournament. They haven't had a close game. You look at FAU, they could have been eliminated in the first round against Memphis. Found a way to win at the end. Close game against Tennessee, they had to come back from down against the Vols to beat them in the second half. Miami could have been out in the first round against Drake. They find a way to make a run at the end, and then off they go on their run. And then San Diego State had a couple close games, of course. The closest game being to Creighton there in the Elite Eight with the foul call at the end. But they also got down 9 against Alabama in the second half, then went on a 12-0 run and put the Crimson Tide away.
So did you, when you were filling out your bracket and putting bets in for this tournament, I know for me, I felt like this was one of the hardest tournaments to read in recent history just because of how, you know, basketball went this year. That, you know, you had some teams that you thought, okay, yeah, they're going to be there. And, you know, Purdue was obviously the biggest upset of the tournament. But did you feel like it was kind of hard to get a gauge on things even at the beginning?
Yeah, absolutely I did. Just because of the fact that you didn't really have that dominant team this year. I mean, you always are going to have favorites. You always are going to have teams that are going to be like, you know, right at the top of the food chain in college basketball. But you didn't have, if you go back a little over 10 years ago, you didn't have like a 2012 Kentucky when Anthony Davis was there in Lexington, where they were like the clear best team all year and they were the team to beat all year. You didn't really have that here, and you had some teams that, quite frankly, have not been used to being the favorites because you didn't have Duke and Kentucky and Kansas necessarily. You had Kansas for a little bit, but you didn't have all those teams up there. So you had teams that were kind of new to being number one seeds or being top five ranked teams in the country, the Houstons, the Alabamas, and the like. So Marquette was up there as a very high 2 seed. So you weren't used to that. So I thought that this was going to be unpredictable. I didn't think we were going to have 2 5-seeds, 4 seeds, and a 9 seed, however.
Wes Reynolds from the VSiN Network joins us. Wes, there are 37 people out there who did pick this Final Four, and I wonder what their ages are or if they just randomly went through it all. But switching over to the women's side of things, I have always counted on Dawn Staley to cover that spread. She covers it quite a bit, but I'm looking at this matchup between Iowa and South Carolina in the women's tournament tonight. And Caitlin Clark has been an absolute superstar. I mean, the 40-point triple-double the other night. How do you view this game? I did see that South Carolina is about an 11.5-point favorite, so the money's coming in on them. How do you view this game? Do you think that spread is a little bit too big?
Well, I think you got to consider it somewhat fair, Michelle, just because of the fact that South Carolina has been the wagon all year. They've been the number one team from the jump, and 36-0, you can't really argue it. And plus the fact that number one defense in the country is South Carolina, and that's what makes this matchup tonight, I think, so fascinating, and why you're going to see a massive television rating, I think, even on a Friday night for this game. The Iowa-Louisville game, actually, the Elite Eight game on Sunday, had a bigger rating than any NBA game on ESPN. So ESPN got what they wanted with South Carolina against Caitlin Clark. And this is the clash of defense and offense. I mentioned South Carolina, number one defense, but Iowa, the number one scoring offense, just under 88 points a game. It's not just Clark. They have several other starters in double figures, but this is a step up in class, I think, really for both teams, because much has been made about, oh, well, Iowa has never seen a defense like South Carolina. Well, South Carolina hadn't had to play against a dynamic offense like Iowa with a player that has basically in the gym range like Caitlin Clark. So when I was looking at this, I didn't look at the spread. I looked more at the total. And I would be willing to go over 149, 149.5, 150, simply because I think this could play out a little bit like the Maryland game in the Elite Eight for South Carolina, where they get a comfortable lead, but they don't quite blow them out, but they get up, you know, in the mid-teens, close to 20 points. And then Iowa's just going to keep running their offense, and Caitlin Clark is going to keep shooting. So you could get some points in, like, garbage time, where it's like the game is still not settled, but it's not close enough. So I think this is going over the total tonight.
Would you sprinkle a little money on Iowa on the money line?
I would not. I don't see them beating South Carolina. I just think South Carolina is too athletic, too physical, too tough. Even though the Big Ten, this has been kind of the glory year for the Big Ten in women's basketball with Iowa, Maryland, and Ohio State, and arguably the best team in the conference was my alma mater, Indiana, who was a one seed who got upset in the second round by Miami. Mm-hmm. And here we go again. You know, we have two SEC teams in the women's Final Four with South Carolina and LSU.
Yeah, who could potentially be, you know, facing each other. Well, Wes, when you take a look at both Final Fours right now, men's or women's, is there a particular, you know, prop or parlay that you are really liking and hitting on this weekend?
Well, I look at a couple player props because it is so hard, I think, now when you're down to four teams. These lines and the point spreads are as tight as they are going to be. So it's hard to find that edge, you know, when you only have two semifinals and one final game left. So player props are probably the way, I think, to really get involved in this game. If you're not really sure for the side, and then, you know, but you want to be involved, but you want to have some action on the game. So one player prop that I played actually is in the UConn and Miami game. And I did go under the points, and you can also go under what is called the PRA, the points, the rebounds, and assists combined. And that would be Nigel Pack for Miami, who has been just a great shooter and a guy that, you know, has scored a lot of points so far, but he's against a really good defense, and he's against UConn, the eighth lowest effective field goal percentage in the country. So he's a guy that hunts threes too. He's not a guy that really gets to the foul line very often. He is out there to stand out there in a spread offense, get some open threes, but he's not really a driver to the basket in this Miami offense. So that's why I went under Nigel Pack, 14.5 points, under 19.5 points, rebounds, assists.
We're talking to Wes Reynolds from VSiN. He joins us talking a little sports betting and baseball opened yesterday, Wes, and excited for that because I love Major League Baseball. I think the Astros are kind of viewed as the favorite, but there's a group of the Astros, the Braves, the Yankees, the Dodgers that are in there, then the Mets just behind them. Is there a dark horse team, though, that you like for potentially winning the World Series?
Yeah, you know, when you're looking, I think the usual suspects are clearly going to be up there. And even if the team lost yesterday, like the Astros, you don't necessarily want to make a snap judgment after one day. But, you know, if I'm looking in the American League, I think the Toronto Blue Jays, we've kind of been waiting for that team. And look, they're in arguably the toughest division in baseball when you have the Yankees up there and you also have the Tampa Bay Rays, who you can never discount. It's like, there's the Rays. You look at them on paper and, you know, all of a sudden that they're there at the end. So I think the Blue Jays, we've been waiting for a couple years for them to emerge, but they've moved the fences in actually in Toronto. So I think that's going to be really good for Vlad Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette. I think they're going to put up huge numbers this year. So in the American League, I would say Toronto is the dark horse. In the National League, I think a lot of people are a little bit more lukewarm on the Dodgers. They've actually been a popular season win to go under the total. I think they closed 95.5, even though they get a win over the Diamondbacks last night, just because the Dodgers lost so much. They lost both the Turners. They lost Justin Turner. They lost Trey Turner to Philadelphia, who I bet 12-1 to win National League MVP. And the Dodgers are having to replace a lot of offense. And you have a pitching staff, especially led by Clayton Kershaw, who's not getting any younger. They're going to have to really manage his innings. So he's not going to be a guy that goes to the sixth or seventh inning. And that's something that you kind of saw yesterday. Even early on, I know we hear the term load management in the NBA. Load management is part of Major League Baseball, too, especially with the pitchers. You don't want to run these pitchers out there, you know, right away and burn them out where they're going into the seventh inning and they're eating up innings going forward, because you want them healthy for the postseason. So, you know, it's a different baseball as well this year, because I don't know if you guys saw the times of the games with the pitch clock now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So many of these games went under 3 hours. I think you had three games go over 3 hours yesterday, and they were the highest scoring games, you know, Philadelphia and Texas, Baltimore, Boston, where I think the score was 10-9. So far, at least through one day of a sample size, this pitch clock has seemingly shortened these games.
Well, and I'm curious real quick, Wes, of how the, you know, the no shift, the bigger bases, so maybe leading to more steals or, you know, more safe plays at first when it's close, how that might affect betting when it comes to overs or anything like that.
Yeah, I think so. And I think when you look at season wins, like there were a couple teams that I played that I don't expect are going to be playoff teams or World Series contender, but their win totals were in the mid-70s, and that's the Arizona Diamondbacks and the Florida Marlins. Those are teams that you look up and down the lineup, they don't have a murderer's row of a bunch of home run hitters and a lot of power in the lineup, but one thing they have is they have speed. And those teams with a lot of, you know, guys that steal bases, that move around, you know, try to get the runners over, kind of old school baseball, I think those teams are going to be a little bit better in that regard. And I also think it helps that they're playing less division games. For a team like the Diamondbacks, it's like, okay, you're playing 18 less games against the Dodgers and the Padres, who are clearly two World Series contenders. So I think that helps teams like that. In terms of the overs, over-unders, I think they were about dead even in day one. So some days you're going to have big over days. Some days you're going to have big under days. So, you know, it really all depends. Early on, you usually see more unders anyway in the Major League Baseball seasons because it's cold. Because it's cold outside. And, you know, usually you get unders. And then when the temperatures kind of heat up in June and July and so on and so forth, that's where you get a lot more runs on the board. So, yeah, I'm going to be interested to kind of monitor this trend a little bit. And I was actually talking on my show last night with former Cincinnati Reds GM Wayne Krivsky. He thinks that this pitch clock actually is going to hurt the hitters a little bit more than it is the pitchers, because the pitchers obviously can control the game because they have the ball on every possession, simply put, you know, like the quarterback. So it's going to throw off the timing of the hitter. So I think you're going to see more unders at least early in the season.
Well, I think it's going to be fun for sure. Wes, appreciate you doing this today. Really enjoyed the conversation, and we will definitely do it again soon.
Thanks, Wes.
Thanks a lot, guys. Good to be with you.
Absolutely. Wes Reynolds from VSiN You can check him out there on 94.9 The Fan, where we have the VSiN network. And coming up next, Michelle, we will make our selections for the men's and women's Final Four as it is this weekend. Looking forward to that. That is coming up here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Hey, Nashville Sounds, do want to reiterate this. They have postponed tonight's game, and will play a doubleheader tomorrow against the Louisville Bats. Pre-game coverage beginning at 4:50 p.m. on 94.9 The Fan. The first pitch will be at 5:05. Gates are going to open at 4. They will have the Fox 17 fireworks show. Will occur after the second seven-inning game on Saturday. So they will still have fireworks tomorrow. So everything just being pushed, and they will have a double tomorrow. So just keep that in mind if you were planning on going to the game tonight with that. And Sunday, the first pitch is at 2:05 as well against Louisville. It is time. The Final Four is here. We're going to make selections in both the men's and women's Final Four, and with that, I turn things over to the reporter, Nick Kieser.
Yes, we are here, the Final Four. FAU, my very own Conference USA team that I did see quite a bit when they took on the Hilltoppers during my time there, but they're taking on the San Diego State Aztecs. San Diego is a 2.5-point favorite. This should be a dicey game tonight, or Saturday.
Saturday. Michelle, go first.
FAU has only lost to a couple teams this year, MTSU being one of them, Ole Miss, and UAB, and I think they get their fourth loss of the season. I'm picking San Diego State. They are, Nick, were they -1.5, you said? -2.5. I'm taking San Diego State to cover that spread. I just think when you look at the size of these teams, San Diego State, they've got grown men out there. I think it's going to be a very defensive performance, so I'm also going to take the under on that, but I'm taking San Diego State to the final.
So, Michelle, you take San Diego State -2.5. As we talk about this, I'm just going to pull away from the microphone and fade away, because that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to fade you on that. Give me Florida Atlantic +2.5.
I really like that. I think Robbie and you are justified with your picks. They're a stellar team to watch.
Give me the money line, +125 on Super Bowl.
All right. Even better. Well, the Miami Hurricanes will take on UConn. So, UConn's been shooting lights out. They're 5.5-point favorites, but I don't know. I have a good feeling that Miami's guards will stand the test and beat UConn.
I agree with that. I'll go first on this one. I'm taking Miami +5.5. I think this will be a pretty close game, but I think Miami, their guard play has been phenomenal this entire tournament. And I think Wes Reynolds brought up a really good point. You know, Miami's been in these tough situations throughout the tournament, and they've been able to prevail and come out on top. I mean, the Texas game I thought was over, and they kept fighting. Their guards were close to perfect. And now they're heading to the Final Four. UConn hasn't had a close game, a tough mental test yet. So I think Miami has the slight edge there. I'm picking Miami +5.5 also to win the game. But I will say, Chase, quickly, if UConn wins it all this weekend, that'll be their fifth title in 25 years. Something only very few programs have been able to do.
Okay. Well, so you go Miami +5.5. We're just on the other side. That's okay. I will lay the 5.5 for UConn. I just think the magic might run out for Miami. And I feel like UConn is the best team remaining with the Final Four. So give me Connecticut -5.5. And obviously the money line, even though there's no value. But I think UConn wins it.
All right, well, on the women's side, we got LSU taking on Virginia Tech. The Tigers are 2-point favorites. I would not doubt that staff to get the job done. What say you guys?
Michelle. Okay, LSU, Virginia Tech. My sister is having her orientation at Virginia Tech today, so shout out Bella, congratulations. But unfortunately, I am not picking the Hokies to go on to the championship round. I'm picking LSU. Kim Mulkey has coached and been in this situation, played in this situation so many times. This team's been on a tear this year in the SEC, a tough SEC. I'm taking LSU to cover that spread and be in the championship game on Sunday.
I am going to go LSU as well. I just think that they're going to be too tough. I mean, look, what Virginia Tech's done has been fun. It's been a fun ride for them, but no Hokies in this one, so give me LSU.
All right, well, the last game that we have to pick is Iowa versus South Carolina. The Gamecocks are an 11.5-point favorite. Who do we got?
I'm taking Iowa plus the 11.5. I understand why South Carolina is such a big favorite. And Dawn Staley is a covering master with the spreads. But Caitlin Clark has been on a tear. She's not the only good player on their team offensively. This team is explosive. I think she has another huge game. And you know what? I'm taking them to pull the upset.
So you're going upset all the way.
Upset.
This from covers.com. Dawn Staley's squad has an average margin of victory of 29.5 points per game this season. That advantage is slimmed a little bit during the tournament to 22.5. But South Carolina has proven its worth on both ends of the floor en route to its third straight Final Four appearance. I am going to take Iowa to cover, South Carolina to win.
Oh, there you go. That'll be a popular one. Also, Chase, quickly to note before we leave today, just a thank you to Jim Nance. 32 years, 354 games later with Jim Nance's final March Madness coming to a close this year.
I know.
Best in the business. Best in the business. I think he'll still be calling the championship game and doing the trophy ceremony for years to come. But
Jim, if you're listening, I know you're a Nashville native now. You're the best. So
yes, the absolute best. You think of a lot of his legendary calls throughout the years. So, and we get one shining moment videos coming up very, very soon.
Yeah, I guess we do. You're excited about that.
I am.
But it's going to be fun. A lot of a fun weekend of basketball. Hey, enjoy the weekend. It's been a tough week. Hug your loved ones. Laugh a little bit. Let's make this world a better place. That's what I try to do every day, and that's what we need to do. And change needs to happen, and let's start it right now.
Well said, Chase.
Coming up next, it's Caroline Willey and D. Mace, NFL draft. They will get into that. Daniel Jeremiah had some things that they're going to discuss. That's coming up next on 102.5, 106.3 The Game.